this is Space Kate, and I'm looking at the stars on the Space Coast in Florida, and I think there are so many incredible stories that are kind of behind the scenes, not necessarily the things that you would hear about from the space program. And I'm lucky enough to have one of the people who has worked on the shuttle program sitting beside me. If you'd like to introduce yourself.
Well, my name is Omar. I work with the operations security.
What exactly does that mean? You basically stop people like me trying to stow away in the shuttle.
I've heard it described as the bodyguards for the space shuttle, and that's sort of accurate, yeah. We pretty much any area, any access point inside to get inside the vehicle, we monitor that and make sure that only space flight approved items and people get into the vehicle, just maintaining the vehicle integrity.
So that's a pretty important job. Obviously, humans are flying on shuttle, or were flying on shuttle, and you want to make sure that they're safe. I've heard that there are some areas where you might not expect there to be a risk or a problem, but it was something that you had to watch over.
Well, back in the early 90s, this is before my time, there was an unusual problem out at the launch pad. I don't know if a lot of people know, the space shuttle's external tank was made of some relatively soft external foam. And what would happen was, on this one particular flight preparation, some woodpeckers, I believe they were northern I can't remember the exact name, but they were woodpeckers. Anyway, they landed on the external tank of the vehicle, and they actually did some damage. They poked their holes into the vehicle and caused enough damage that the vehicle had to be rolled back to the vehicle assembly building for repairs on its external tank.
That's no small thing.
Well, no, the foam on that external tank has to be as uniform as possible for ice pockets not to form during the cryogenic loading of the fuel before launch. They took that so seriously that for every mission preparation after that, they decided they wanted people on the pad 24/7 or almost 24/7 to be looking out for birds and other, they called it avian deterrence, to keep the natural wildlife from harming the external tank anymore. And so that fell to my department. And what would happen is, in my department, to be trained in all the stations, it would take a certain amount of training, a certain amount of time. But the one duty that didn't require any training was the birdwatch duty. So the new people, the brand new hires, their first duty, if there was a vehicle on the pad, would be to go out there and start the birdwatch duty. And literally, you would sit there for anywhere between 8 to 12 hours. You would have an air horn, and you would have some binoculars, and just be constantly scanning the vehicle and be ready to scare away nature if it was required at any point. And it never really was necessary. We never had any other threats after that. But that's one of the behind-the-scenes stories there that nobody hears a lot about.
I can think of plenty of people, myself included, who would quite happily have sat at the pad for like 8 or 12 hours watching over an orbiter.
Yeah, it could be fun.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah, it could be fun.
Absolutely. It's another place where you could see some of the activities preparing for launch up close. That was another good opportunity for that.
But I love the way you call it the avian deterrent. There
NASA
are some great
has
terms.
To make it. Yeah, absolutely.
The one I love was I kept hearing, like, when I was waiting for Discovery to launch, and she had some problems on her final launch as well, and there was this thing, they were going to power cycle it. And I was like, oh, what's that? And then someone said, well, basically, they're going to turn it off and on again. And I was like, oh, wow. So that's it. Anytime if my laptop's, misbehaving,
sure.
I power cycle it. And people are like, oh, that's technical. I'm like,
That's one thing that NASA's very good at, is making things sound harder than they are. But that's the way it is.
So that can't be the only example of that. What other kooky things sound more technical than they are, just to make it sound like rocket science?
Right. Well, you think frequency response tests. That makes you think maybe of electricity, electrical waves. It's close to that. I had nothing to do with this duty, is what I was told from my coworkers.
Right.
Apparently, it started back in the Apollo days when they would stack the vehicle in the vehicle assembly building. They would want to make sure that it was structurally sound. And so it would literally happen that they would get a group of men with strong legs, put some special padding on their shoes, and they would literally push on the rocket with their feet to get it swaying to ensure that it was structurally sound there, and to make sure the frequency response was literally the force with which it would bounce back and forth. And apparently it was done with the shuttle a few times also, so that's another technical job that was done that sounds sort of fun.
what would have happened if it wasn't structurally sound?
Well, I guess
I don't think I'd want to be lying underneath all of that if
I'm assuming they
wasn't
would have found that
right.
out pretty quickly. So luckily that never happened. It was also always very sound.
But you never did that.
No, I wasn't lucky enough to be. It would have been fun, but no, I didn't get to do that.
Wow, I'm going to start on a mission now to collect some of these stories because I think they are brilliant. So I'm going to set you a task to start thinking, and when I'm back here from my ISU course in June,
okay.
I shall come back and find you, and we shall do some proper recordings of interesting stories
Absolutely.
Behind the scenes. Thank
right.
you.
Sure.